Welcome, everyone, to the Friday night public discussion group of Perfecting Horizons Institute. We are in paper 65, right at the beginning, which is old single column, page 730. Okay, so we shift gears, we reset. They want to take us through the whole evolutionary process yet again. Only now, very much from the top down. They've been taking us through kind of down in the trenches, by and large, focusing on the immediacy of the biologic evolution, issues of social evolution, what have you, when you finally had humans. But they want to give us the story, the main story about evolution that is so not recognized by any scientist today, that there is an over-control of evolution, as you can see from the title of the paper. Most immediately, that over-control is the influence of mind upon that living energy system below. With the mindedness of some beings thrown in the early days, too. But in terms of the fundamental engagement of an over-controlling influence to the individual organisms, that engagement that is, the most intimate, that is engaging all of the, nearly countless details of that biologic system in a complete wholeness of engagement. It's the mind energy system above the physical energy system that is that immediate means for the over-control. And it begins with the mechanical mind in the plants and moves forward to the adjutant mind ministry when you get to the animals. But as I hinted at there, there's also the issues of with master physical controllers and life carriers. And as you'll see there, they're going to give us a little bit about them too here as we start. But just keep in mind that that in general, this is a look at the evolutionary process fundamentally from the vantage point of mind. And so when you go to interpret a paragraph here, don't immediately think, well, what is this trying to tell me about the molecular structure or something? Don't go there first. The point is to ask the question, it's like, well, what is this saying about mind? Even if the paragraph doesn't use the word mind anywhere, every paragraph basically is about that mind over matter engagement. And so that's what you're most fundamentally looking for. All right, so let's get in here and... this is a wonderful little thumbnail sketch that they have here in the preface of this paper.
Paper 65, The Overcontrol of Evolution. Basic evolutionary material life, pre-mind life, is the formulation of the master physical controllers and the life impartation ministry of the seven master spirits in conjunction with the active ministration of the ordained life carriers. As a result of the coordinate function of this threefold creativity, there develops organismal physical capacity for mind, material mechanisms for intelligent reaction to external environmental stimuli, and later on to internal stimuli, influences taking origin in the organismal mind itself.
Okay, so the first thing, if you're... tuned into a lot of the details in the revelation about what they've told us about mind. you're struck by, I need to properly interpret how they're using the mind, at least in this first paragraph, using the word mind, at least in this first paragraph, in a relative mode. Remember a similar thing, we saw is when you're, way back there and in paper 58 and you get to the section on the life dawn era and they talk about the life carriers implanting life, and you think, that's life started right there. Well, no, eukaryotic life started right there. Right? They're implanting eukaryotic life in those three locations in the shallow seas. Remember how we had to think in relative terms there? Yeah, but we already figured out there's been prokaryotic life for hundreds of millions of years already. Right?
Which
the massive physical controllers were behind. But the life carriers had to come at least on that scouting party and give it that first phase of life animation. But here, see, when they say pre-mind life, that should make you to cock your head. It's like, wait a minute, life that doesn't have mind? Oh, okay, they don't mean literally no mindedness at all. I bet they're meaning pre-adjutant mind life. Right? See, that's how they're starting it out. See, so basic, and you're going, well, wait a minute, plants just have mechanical mind and they're evolutionary material life. And so when they say basic evolutionary material life, notice how you can't have a computer interpret these sentences for you. I mean, they have a sophistication to them. What that's telling you without spelling it out is, okay, I'm basically talking about get before the adjutants. And when they're saying evolutionary life, obviously the main point they're wanting to get to is animals. They're not going to dwell, obviously, a lot on plants if they're starting it out in that mode. So always be ready to approach what you're reading with that sort of contextualization. I often bring this up. If the book says the word personality, you have to figure out in context. I mean, are they using that just for the literal existential influence from eternity, that spirit pattern, that non-object fact coming from eternity, coming from the universal father? Or is it short for personalized self? Or even saying, well, there's a number of personalities in the room here, and there we're kind of even expanding beyond, merely your personalized self. We're kind of using it as a word to indicate the whole of you, body and all, sitting here, right? So you need to always think contextually. They'll use an expression in one way in one part of the book and a different way in the other part of the book. You have to figure out in context. So we start out, so we understand that what they say after that is, when they say it's a formulation of the master physical controllers, a life impartation ministry of the seven master spirits in conjunction with the active ministration of the ordained life carriers, what they're saying is all those individuals getting things primed to have adjutant-minded creatures evolving. Okay, all the precursors to that. Now, the one little thing that might throw you there is when they say the life impartation ministry of the seven master spirits. Okay, you're going, now wait a minute. We've gone through some of this before. Wasn't the deal that the creative mother spirit is the immediate source through the life carriers? Yes, but obviously you can back up, from the creative mother spirit as a creative spirit to a master spirit, even the infinite spirit. And the deal there is, I just mentioned it a little bit ago. Remember, the life carriers all by themselves can impart the first phase of life animation, what I've termed the living vitality. But in order to get the second phase, the reproductive spark, you know, that needs to be there if you're going to have eukaryotic life, this evolutionary life, okay, you need, you can't just have what is directly handed down from above through Mother Deity and gets, you know, inherent in the life carriers. You also you need in parallel with that what's handed down through spirit type deity. Right? So you have the infinite spirit and the sevenfold expression there of the seven master spirits. It's doling out that additional conduit of bestowal so that you can get the reproductive spark down. Okay, that's why that's brought in. And see, and they're selecting to say it that way with the seven master spirits, so you're just reminded between the lines that you have a different bestowal in each of the seven super universes. You can, you know, also consider those details. Yep.
Well, I have a question regarding that. Did they mention all seven? They didn't say specifically it's only the influence of one that bestows life here. Somehow all seven are involved.
Right, if you go all the way up, but you know, remember what I was saying. You know, the creative mother spirit is the immediate conduit for that bestowal of the reproductive spark. You know, she's directly engaging the modified life carrier. And, you know, we're about to read about them being modified here, and she has been made specific to a particular super universe by a particular master spirit. But yeah, obviously, as you go on, like I said, you follow it back up through a particular master spirit, then you have the super additive consequence super summative consequence of the relationship of all seven master spirits. You have the synchronization of that with the infinite spirit. Sure, you can follow it all the way up. But they were just, you know, they didn't want to belabor it, but they'll often say something in a slightly unexpected way just to get you thinking and reminding you of some of the details without spelling it all out again, you know, laboriously. They're expecting you to have internalized, you know, everything we've read in all the previous papers. So they'll often, you know, speak in shorthand, you could say. Okay, so... between that bestowal coming down for the reproductive spark and then also the living vitality, you know, plus you have the life carriers literally designing and constructing the initial single celled eukaryotes, and you've got the master physical controllers that were involved with the prokaryotes, and remember, you're going to be putting prokaryotes as the power plants into eukaryotic cells, a chloroplast or mitochondrion, right? They're indirectly involved in that whole process. Plus, they're the mechanical controllers are the ones that are ministering mechanical mind. Right? So you got that whole complexity. That's just reminding you of that whole complexity, what it takes to get to the point where you're going to have adjutant minded creatures built upon that elaborate foundation, all that went into that foundation. See, so that's the whole point. Yeah. Well,
protoplast is synonymous with mitochondria, or are they distinct?
Prokaryotes. I think I said prokaryotes.
All right.
If I didn't, that's what I meant to say, was prokaryotes.
I'm glad we avoided
an
unnecessary thing.
Yeah, the prokaryotes, in contrast to the eukaryotes. The things that are made by the power beings, so they can serve as power plants for a eukaryotic cell. Okay, see, so anyway, that long story made long, even longer. Here, that first sentence is just about reminding you of the foundation. That's the whole point. See, and then on that foundation, as a result, see, of the coordinate function, Okay, so there develops the organismal physical capacity for mind. You're thinking, well, okay, they really are in that more sophisticated mode of adjutant mind, as they're saying mind there. So you're using the word intelligent reaction is even more appropriate, instead of just sort of, mental or mindal reaction, if you will. But notice here, they're reminding you, initially, we're talking about material organisms, all the way up to us. And, for us, the outer life, the relationship to the external world is just a relationship to the one substance in the external world, matter. We don't relate to spirit substance, in like way. It is the other substance in the external world, outside of your mind, but you don't see it or hear it or strip over it, or whatnot, like we always talk about that way. So, the external, in any sort of a directly understandable way, is just the material. So you have material stimuli on the one hand, and then they point out at the end there, there's another, input into your mindal self, or any mindal self, right? From that other substance in the external world, spirit substance, right? But that all, it initially appears to just be all internal. But, you got to know, technically, spirit is not inside your mind, right? It's outside. It's in the external world. So that quote-unquote internal stimuli, i.e., spirit, spiritual stimulus. Right? So that bit about, and later on, once you get to the point where you go all the way up to the seventh adjutant and get encircled in the Holy Spirit, right, then your mind can experience stimuli from that other substance in the external world. Okay, so by the end of the paragraph, they've taken you all the way up. All the way from thinking about your initial very rudimentary facts that the master physical controllers and whatnot are dealing with, all the way up to being something that can be influenced by a spirit ministry. Right? You can have experiences of the influence of a spirit ministry. The Holy Spirit, the Spirit of Truth, Thought Adjuster, angelic ministry, whatever. Okay, then they give you just a little bullet point thing here.
There are, then, three distinct levels of life production and evolution. One, the physical energy domain, mind capacity production. Two, the mind ministry of the adjutant spirits, impinging upon spirit capacity. Three, the spirit endowment of mortal mind, culminating in thought adjuster bestowal.
So there you see it very directly, that the main thing they want you to be thinking about when they say quote-unquote mind, right, is adjutant mind. So when they say mind capacity production, that's adjutant mind capacity production. And then you actually have the adjutant ministry. And then, like we were saying, all the way up until you get the encirclement of the Holy Spirit. And, so the initial spirit ministry that is influencing you is that Holy Spirit ministry. If it's pre-bestowal son on a world, eventually one of those individuals can get to the point where they can get a thought adjuster. That would be an additional ministry that they would culminate. Now, like on this world, post-Pentecost, we also get the Spirit of Truth. And shortly thereafter, as soon as the thought adjuster can get through the line on your versa, right, shows up in your mind, and you have that culminating, right, in that one. So you have the spirit of fact, the spirit of truth, and the spirit of goodness. All three spirit ministries engage you. Even though you're not conscious of it. And in many ways, of all the one that you, it's healthiest to not be immediately conscious of, it's that culminating one. It's best that you are grown to handle such a culminating influence as a conscious experience. It's effectively a fragment of God, but when you're oblivious to that fact, if you become conscious of that engagement, the next thing you know, you think you're God.
Handle with care.
Right. Right. So the whole point is for it to be very, super conscious initially and slowly. Maybe eventually get up to a first circler at some point, and you've got this all sorted out. You're not going to go off on a delusional tangent of self-exaltation. Right? It's like, no, I think I was touched by God. No, I wasn't touched by God. No, I'm pretty sure I am God. I mean, that's the way this works. When you can't, because it's because it's within your mind, right? Unlike the other two, the Holy Spirit and the Spirit of Truth that are above your mind, it takes some very humble, definitive discrimination to separate it from you. You'll fail. Young people that have that are aware of their just arriving always fail at this, and it leads to lots of problems.
When you get to the point where you actually fuse with that part of God within you, that you think you're God either.
No, that's why I qualified that. By the time you get to a first circler, you've got. By the time you're on the verge of fusing, in the not too distant future, you can handle this, right? You have it very separated. You have high levels of humility and sincerity and whatnot. By the time you get to be a first circler, you're not going to go off on that delusional tangent, or at least it's extremely unlikely. Try to speculate on the number of people that go off to iniquity, on the mansion worlds, by the time you get to the fifth mansion world, I mean, you got to wonder. I mean, does this ever happen? I mean, theoretically, I guess, like they say, theoretically, right up to the point of fusion, you could go off on a tangent, right? But practically, I mean, does anyone ever get, one nanometer away from fusion and then turn at right angles and go to iniquity? I mean, it's got to be extremely low probability event, one would think.
Or you can just claim you're a first circle. And all your friends at all your parties,
you may have a lot of people. The rebellion, brings in a different issue. If you're actually grabbed at right angles and drug away, essentially by your nose ring, by and Lanonendeck, that's another issue. But we have to recognize you get to the first mansion world, and you're going to have the same phenomenon there of someone saying, I'm pretty sure I'm a first circler, right? That whole delusional thing is like, no, you're a seventh, and we'll work at it. We'll get there eventually. Anyway, I don't want to go off on that tangent too far. So in those first two paragraphs, they kind of, in two different modes, they give you the full spectrum of what the evolutionary process is about relative to mind, see? Right? That you're starting with the foundational stuffs of mechanical mind and just the living matter, and you're going all the way up through to the highest mortal mindedness and engagement of the spirit ministries. That's the spectrum they're wanting to sweep you through in this paper. Just remind you, see, of that. That's what the evolutionary process is doing. When you think about it from a mind perspective, it's going through that spectrum. All right, a little bit more here about what that foundation is about.
The mechanical, non-teachable levels of organismal environmental response are the domains of the physical controllers. The agitant mind spirits activate and regulate the adaptive or non-mechanical teachable types of mind, those response mechanisms of organisms capable of learning from experience. And as the spirit agitants thus manipulate mind potentials, so do the life carriers exercise considerable discretionary control over the environmental aspects of evolutionary processes right up to the time of the appearance of human will, the ability to know God, and the power of choosing to worship Him.
Okay, so that paragraph does it again. See, it ends all the way up at the top again. It's definitely a pattern here, you see. But you notice they shifted gears a little bit, and they said, well, now technically, mechanical mind is mind. Right? And so see, they shifted gears a little bit, and they're not just using mind, as shorthand for adjutant mind there. And they're reminding you of that differential. And just because an organism only has mechanical mind doesn't mean it doesn't have this interplay with the environment going on where there's stimulus response and adaptation. I mean, obviously plants only have mechanical mind and they do lots and lots of adapting and evolving, right? Okay, so, but, as they're reminding you that that is, it's definitively separate, in the hands of, like I said, the mechanical mind is specifically in the hands of the type of master physical controllers called the mechanical controllers. So it's a phenomenon that is definitely has a ceiling on it, unlike an animal when you bring adjutant mind into play, because the adjutants, as they keep reminding us, go all the way up and engage spirit. Because, of course, it goes all the way up in the creative mother spirit, through her mind nature up to her spirit nature. Right? She doesn't minister that lowest one because you've got these organisms that are definitively have a hard ceiling on their nature, right? And they're not even indirectly feeding all the way up, like even an amoeba is, with the first adjutant. So, plant life or prokaryotes that just have mechanical mind, are in many ways really, really fancy dirt. Right? When I think about it, and plants die and they make that rich dirt that I grow other plants in, right? It's just sort of elevating dirt up a little bit into an animate fanciness, but it has a definite ceiling on it. It's when you get to animals, that there's this potential window there that leads all the way up, even to eternity. Okay. Because you've plugged into a being, you're not using the mind of a master physical controller, their mind presence. You're using the mind presence of the creative mother spirit, a creator being, not a creature. Now technically, let's do this a little aside. It's like if you're really on your game, you'll go, now wait a minute. When you really think about God the sevenfold, right, there's not just sevenfold creators, there's also sevenfold controllers. Right? And one of those sevenfold controllers is the master physical controllers. So isn't, in an indirect way at least, that those master physical controllers, aren't they related to a creator fact, a God? God the sevenfold? Yeah. Like we often remind ourselves, it appears to just be dirt and very bounded away from spirit. Dirt is down there and spirit is way up there and there's this big gap between them. Well, so it appears. But what if you go through the back door? If you go through the back door of dirt, as soon as you go through the door, you're at spirit. Right? You go the other way around. They're actually in an elliptical relationship. And you're thinking they're only in a linear relationship. You're just looking at one long side of the ellipse. Right? And it appears that matter's on one end, spirit's on the other end. Right? And they're bounded as far away as you can be bounded away from each other. Well, unless you go the other way around. And it's immediately, intimate. through infinity and eternity, right? The back door of dirt is the back door of spirit, if you will. Okay, so
Adam's
yeah. Now, remember, what's the biggie that reminds you of that is you have this personal ministry afoot in the universe from the Universal Father, and on if you think about it with one eye, if you will, or from one side, it's the force charge of space. It's the foundation of all the dirt.
Right.
If you think about it with the other eye or the other side, it's all the Father fragments. Pure spirit fragments, right? And see, and it's like a sheet of paper, only it doesn't even have that thickness, right? There's zero distance between the force charge of space on one side, pure energy, and pure spirit, the Father fragments, on the other side. Like I said, see, when you go through the back door, you're instantly in the back door of the other side because the two are together as one in the Father. You want to think about it in that mode. So sometimes you're doing what we're doing here, and you're saying, well, you know, there's the dirt, but we're getting up above the dirt, and we're really getting agitated mind heading towards spirit. But don't ever forget, right? Even in the culmination of the finite, there's a power personality synthesis, and you're bridging that finite differential between dirt and spirit substance. Right, between the two ends of the seemingly linear separation. Right? So in a very, very subtle way, what's going on down there with plants and dirt and whatnot is just as transcendent as what's going on with the thought adjusters and all kinds of fancy spirit ministries and stuff. Right? Don't ever forget that. Right? When all is said and done, the dirt is just as profound as a thought adjuster. Right? It's different, apparently, right? It's different from a sub-absolute perspective, right? Right? But you know, actually, it's just as profound, just as intimately, significantly a part of the purposing of the whole as any other part.
Right. You say it's really great to work in the dirt with your hands.
Right. You actually knew exactly where I was going. See, I was gonna bring you to that very thought. You know that you come back around. You go, oh, when they talk about having that closeness to the dirt, agriculture, or even worshiping in nature and things like that. Oh, they're encouraging me to not do that thing like the apostles wanted to do. Stay up on the top of the Mount of Transfiguration, build a tabernacle, stay there forever, bounded away from the dirt, right? Floating up in the spirit cloud, quote unquote. No, because no matter how much it appears that's the stuff there. No, it's a threefold actuality. And if you're going to engage it in truth, you have to engage it as a triunity. Matter, mind, and spirit equally together and encompassed, or you aren't real. Right? So those subtle little things about working with your hands in the dirt, growing things, having a garden, such things, it's a simple way for us to just be unwittingly not, getting so heavenly minded we're no earthly good, and hence not so real anymore. Not very triune anymore. Spiritual, but not cosmic. Right? Okay. Let's see, was there anything else I needed to bring out in there? Another tangent found me.
Spiritual, not religious, you're not cosmic, twice removed.
Yeah.
Right, you can get grounded instead.
Oh. Okay, oh yeah, that's right. There was one of the other thing in there, the little zinger they threw in there. Notice that they make this parallel between the adjutant mind ministry and much more hands-on sort of thing that you're envisioning that the life carriers are up to. Right? We see there when they say, and as the spirit adjutants thus manipulate mind potential, so do the life carriers exercise considerable discretionary control. I mean, we've talked about how much, you know, before you have will creatures, how much they are doing things with the environment that coincidentally, you know, get creatures to go in certain directions or do certain things, or kind of minimize them in the big picture so that they eventually fade from view and don't bring their genetics into play too much in the evolutionary stream, all those sorts of things. But notice, did they use the word manipulate with the life carriers or with the adjutants? You know, because remember, the M-A-N part of manipulate, that literally means hands. Mm-hmm. Hands on. All right. See, they flipped it on you there. Like I was saying, I mean, in terms of what's the most immediately, quote-unquote, hands-on, you know, really is right down there in the trenches and playing with the dirt, you know, down there in the mud. All right, it's the adjutants. And their functioning, right, is a manipulation. Whether you like it or not, you have a third adjutant. Now, you don't have to be choosing to use it as the spirit of courage, but just as the energy of loyalty, like it or not, it's there. It's functioning as the energy of loyalty. Right? And that's manipulating you. You're being manipulated by that energy all the time. Be loyal to something. What? Oh, anything. Just take anything. Okay, how about this? Or how about that reflection in the mirror? Oh, I like that. Let's be loyal to that.
It's so close.
Huh? Shiny.
Right? Remember, you've got seven energies there, right? They're just functioning. Right? You're being manipulated. They're very hands-on, your mindful self. Right? You need to get a hold of the reins. You need to be the manipulator-in-chief here. Right? You need to master the functioning of those adjutants so they don't just manipulate you off wherever, especially when you start talking about the sixth adjutant. Right? And the manipulation starts to get geometric in potential. And off on a tangent you go, right, to some rail. And you're manipulated by that energy of zeal. Right? So just, you know, think about it like that. You're being manipulated. You know, in the same way that you learn early on, you got to be careful about what some people are trying to say and do for you, quote unquote. You know, they have an agenda. They're trying to manipulate you. Right? They've discovered they can say things in clever ways, and unwittingly you know, it leads you by your nose ring. But that's your nature. Your adjutants are all like that. Right? They're just like that person that's kind of just going with their energy, naturalness, their selfishness or whatnot, you know, and wanting to manipulate you. See, when the adjutants are just energies, see, they're the same sort of thing. Right? You need to find their reins. You need to get at them from the top down. Right? You know, and use that energy to your purposes, your ends. Not some haphazard end, you know, that gets quasi-randomly selected, right, by the environment, right, imposing upon that manipulation.
So that is the spirit of you're using?
Right, when you get a hold of them and start to choose to use them, then they can be the spirit of something. Right? It's not naturally the spirit of courage. It's unnaturally the spirit of courage. Right? I mean, why do we write stories about courage? If it was a natural thing, we wouldn't write stories about it. We write stories about it because it's unnatural and sometimes quite uncommon. Right? If it's very sad to record that so few persons on your rancha take delight in cultivating, right, using their adjutants as a spirit of anything. Oh, I have the spirit of worship. You do. Have you chosen for it to function as the spirit of worship? You know, or is it just the energy of zeal? You know, and it's You've given it gasoline of the third cosmic intuition, and you're just a giant blob of fanaticism now.
Three times the speed of light.
Yeah, all right. Okay.
I can't get it out of my mind. This shooting that happened in Washington just in the last couple of days, the fellow was obviously radicalized, and the question lasted for about 12 hours. How did he get rationed, radicalized? And what you're saying, it's wholly natural.
Right. You are radicalized naturally. It doesn't have to be the relatively extreme things that we tend to use the word radicalized relative to. I mean, all the adjutants are good as long as they are bounded. All good things taken to extreme become bad. Right? You can't just let them run, especially, when it starts to be more appropriate to use the word good like I am there, right? I mean, when you've got something that's, the religious impulse, like the sixth adjutant, right? It's not only, all of them can be the spirit of something, but remember, the third and the sixth are innately the more unity-like ones, the more spiritual-like ones, just in their energy nature, right? That kind of energy is more unity like energy, as opposed to individuality like energy. So, you can be self-radicalized by your failure to function as a person, getting above your mind, finding the reins of those adjutants and getting a hold of them. I mean, it's just natural for you to go off on some tangent. Especially the more all minds are juiced up because the Supreme is moving you to a more kind of baseline spiritualized state, like we've been in for several decades now, or the culture, has a lot of fanaticism in it and that, humans love to imitate, and so you just pick that up. You'll self-radicalize very naturally.
So could you say that, for the most part, these adjutants, that just ongoing manipulation of the energy part until the individual, the person, becomes somewhat spiritualized. Mm-hmm. So is all the energy more or less bottom up and then...
So that's where we kind of get back on track here and step into the next paragraph. See, so when all is said and done, you go, oh, I get it. So they're saying there's the adjutants that are manipulating on the inside and the life carriers and the master physical controllers that are manipulating on the outside, and the whole thing is a vast conspiracy to manipulate you up to the point where you can get in circuit in the Holy Spirit and be given a personality so you have reins, and you can take a hold of the reins, right, and take it from there. See, and as soon as you should be taking it from there, the life carriers have to back off, and the adjutants go into a different mode of function, where they aren't so aggressively manipulating you upward in this vast conspiracy, right? They've taken you up, in this conspiratorial way, right? But once you're up there, it's up to you. It's in your free will hands. If you stay up there, if you continue to supply favorable conditions to go up, grow, be grown up even further, or you point the nose of the plane straight down and plow it into the dirt.
Like that guy that did what he did.
Yeah.
So first he's got the feelings. He's getting all radicalized by his feelings.
Right.
Then he takes it and internalizes it mentally.
Mm-hmm.
He starts thinking that what he did, what he's going to do is good. And then he takes it to the brotherhood, for instance, would be all the people that are saying all the things that he's thinking, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then he takes it to zeal, and he starts shooting everybody, but he never goes up to worship because he can't get up that, because the zeal has, gotten him to not know good from bad, kind of thing.
Right.
So I can see now how things like that can happen in this world when you think about it. It's, they can, the adjutants are controlling you, and yeah, you're not taking hold of them.
Yeah, right. See, so you, when you think through all the physics of it like that, it's like, oh, that's what that whole bit about personal responsibility is all about. See, when you're made a person, right, you have to take all the reins. You have personal responsibility. To him much is given, as much expected. Right? You must guide yourself because free will is absolutely respected. No one is going to guide you. No one's going to direct you. You must take a hold of, you must recognize personal responsibility, search for the reins, find the reins, take a hold of the reins, and exercise self-control. If you don't recognize personal responsibility and exercise self-control in a mind that's been awakened to the full dynamics of spirit animation and knows the word liberty, what do you get? You get the great big problem, false liberty, right? The big problem.
License
of liberty, yes. I mean, you know, that, and see, and that's what that's the insidious sophistry of the Lucifer Rebellion. Oh no, spirit is innately divine. You're self-directing. You don't need to search for the reins. You don't need to exercise self-control. That whole bit about them trying to get you to be able to exercise appropriate self-control, all that debauchery of education, you know. You remember the third principle of the Lucifer Manifesto? I see. See, that's the, and you're going, oh yes. Spirit is innately divine. Oh, I love the fact that I'm naturally the spirit of worship and the spirit of wisdom and the spirit. See? I mean, that's the spiritual candy that he tossed out. It's like, no. if you don't take all the reins when you're given that kind of potential, you won't get the delights of light and life that you're envisioning, you know, in this innate divinity. You'll get the orgy of darkness and death. Right? And so why is this revelation in my lap? Right? Because it's sad to record, there's fewer and fewer people on the planet that understand what we've just been talking about. This used to be basically recognized, not with all the physics we've been using to describe it, right? But basically recognized.
Will among men is like on the tip of everybody.
You know, thy liberty and law, we sang. No, now it's, you know, law is the oppressor. You know, law is like those foreign potentates. Right? We need the second principle, not just the third principle. Right? I see. We are unwittingly slipping in because that's what you do. If the moment you start to think that this all just happens naturally and goes to a delightful end is the beginning of the end. For civilization. Now, because it's post-Pentecost, it's not an individual emergency. You're not going to live long enough for you to evaporate your soul in this short, ignorant life. You know, because of the grace of Pentecost, you'll wake up on the first mansion world. But what you might do to civilization before you die, especially when you socialize, find a whole bunch of like-minded, ignorant, you know, blobs of zeal, and you know what you're going to do to civilization is you're going to collapse civilization, and you know you'll be all fine on the first mansion world as a beginning ascender, but you're going to leave behind, you know, an interregnum, a complete collapse of civilization, because you thought that you didn't have to, you know, teach your child about recognition of personal responsibility and the rigors of exercising self-control. You told them they were innately divine. Big problem. Big problem.
Well, like these people now that are can identify with anything they want to identify. There's this girl, I guess, or a teacher, whoever she is. I heard something about it. She identifies with being a hippopotamus. I mean, this is a true story.
Yeah.
I mean, where's this leading to?
Again, we should get back on track. But you know, but to your point, yeah. Just notice how, you know, it begins to become just the theater of the absurd, right? I mean, you're losing all connection to reality, and you start to just think you are the generator of reality. Your imaginations are real. If you imagine yourself to be something, you are that. Or if we imagine civilization to be something, it is that something. And right, it all becomes this magical, mystical mess. Okay, but it isn't a magical phenomenon. It has all this physics that they're reminding you here, and you know, it helps to appreciate this, the basics, because when all is said and done, the big thing that you want to get out of thinking and thinking and rethinking yet again in this paper about the whole process of evolution is, remember, your development as an individual repeats in parallel what that whole process produced, you know, in the macroscopic with evolution. Ontogeny recapitulates phylogeny, right? That old expression, right? It's important for you to appreciate that whole sequence as it's laid out over hundreds of millions of years, because that's all compacted within you. And you go through that. At some point in your life, there needs to be a Permian extinction. Some point in your life, you've got a vast pile of unmeaningful, maybe it was scaffolding at some point, but it's just detritus now, right? And you need to get out that big eraser, right? And wipe the slate clean. It's like, okay, now I know that was all a lot of ignorant folderol. Let's erase all that. Now, if I only had a true metaphysics, oh, I do. It's in my lap, right? That would allow me to humbly begin to construct a true framework in which to think instead of that random muddle that I've been mucking around in. And I found the courage. I pulled out the eraser, and I erased all my interpretations, all my initial assumptions, and I started fresh with a blank slate.
Cartesian doubt, did they call
it? Yeah. Yeah, right. And of course you go, oh, I'm effectively beginning the enlightenment of my mind. I'm beginning with those first great minds in the enlightenment that knew that that was what they needed to do. They had been unfortunately educated through the highest institutions of learning. And it was time to take hold of the reins themselves. Right? There was a vast conspiracy of ignorance that they discovered that they were wallowing in. And they didn't want to limit themselves to the ignorance of others anymore. They took about the big eraser. But the problem is, they were at the beginning of the 17th century instead of the beginning of the 20th century, where they could have had what they needed, right? A true metaphysics, a true framework. Okay, they got back to the story here of sweeping through mind. What's that? The final little thing they throw in here.
It is the integrated functioning of the life carriers, the physical controllers, and the spirit adjutants that conditions the course of organic evolution on the inhabited worlds. And this is why evolution, on Urantia or elsewhere, is always purposeful and never accidental.
Okay, what's the truth of that paragraph for you? We already basically just said it a moment ago, if you recall. Think about it. Individualize that. So did it all just magically come about in the evolutionary process and you ended up with Annan and Fanta? No. It is the integrated functioning of the life carriers, the physical controllers, and the spirit adjutants that conditions the course of organic evolution. Right? There has to be all of these people who have a hold of the reins and are supplying the favorable conditions for that system to be grown. Because that's what evolution is, growth on the big scale. You've got to do the exact same thing. You've got to take all the reins. You have to supply the favorable conditions. I determined to be loyal. I am determined to be humble. I am determined to be sincere. I am determined to be just. I am determined to be patient. Right? I'm determined to supply the favorable conditions. Just like in parallel to what the life carriers, the physical controllers, and the adjutants did oh so long ago. Right? And I'm going to be grown. Right? If I don't do that, it's going to be accidental, like I was just saying. Right? That that framework that all of your thoughts are going to exist in, are going to be predicated on, is going to be a haphazard, accidental phenomenon. Well, you know, that random thing oozed that into this pore, and that random thing oozed that into this pore, and I've got this, you know, I've rationalized it all together. Okay. Right. You want to be purposeful, full of purpose, not full of accident. Right? And it's sad to record that so few persons on your rancha, right, even have the potential to be purposeful. You can't put purpose of any wholeness of form, fullness, right, in some haphazard, accidental pile of debris, right? Yep.
So as I think about this, I'm wondering about the factor of time. You know, and mm-hmm. when you have these beings that basically are, you know, working together, and, you know, and over all this period of time of evolution, and evolution, you know, for me takes time.
Mm-hmm.
So
does growth.
What?
So does growth.
So does growth, right? Well, evolution.
Mm, yeah, same thing.
But the fact, you know, the time factor, you know, and we've read a bunch of things about how the life carriers, you know, were waiting and waiting on their new experiment for it to pop.
Uh-huh, right.
It took a while for it to pop and those kinds of
things. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But they talk, you know, this last, it's all purposeful, it's all going in that direction, but where, you know, the time element of it that seems to, you know, there's the suddenlies and then there's the thing that take millions and millions of years.
Right.
And I'm, you know, trying to, you know, come to terms with who decides about that. Is that what the Supreme Being does?
Yes, the whole of the finite. Right. I mean, you know, technically, you know, down in the finite, you know, it's not the Supreme Being because he's a transcendental being. It's the universal mother. You know, there's a personal purpose of expression down in the finite. Right, is that capital P providence, if you will, is that influence within the total finite that is the final say on when things happen, right? When is the fullness of time? Only that fact which is ubiquitous throughout all of finite time.
So part of the self-mastery you were talking about a minute ago. So.
Yeah.
Is recognizing that as well. I mean, it's not just, dang, I'm going to make this happen. I'm going to master this thing, and you know, or whatever, and use all my wisdom, etc., and try to be patient and loving and, you know, humble, etc. But there's still, I remember the thing that Jesus, I think it was to Gandhi, when he said, you know, I'm here today walking with you and your dad, you know, my tomorrow is totally in the hands of my father.
Right, yeah.
That kind of...
Yeah.
There's
see, and it's technically in the hands of the Father's way, the Mother,
is
right?
That where faith comes in.
Faith is what, you know, initiates your relationship to this these qualities that you're going to need for the long haul. You know, you in order for your mind to ever potentially have enduring peace, you know, there's no naturalness to enduring peace. You know, you have to impose that artificially. Step one is to grab a hold of the reins, if you will. What technically are those? I keep using this analogy of the reins, right? Remember, you have a personality, a spirit grabber, that faith grasp, right? Technically, you know, if you want to just think in these physics terms, what that faith is taking a hold of the spirit influence that's imposed upon your mind and not letting it just do whatever, but you taking a hold of it, you know, and putting your purposing into its direction on your mind. And
part of that can be realizing that time is involved, so to speak.
Right. But see, it all begins with, before you have all of that kind of big picture awareness, the little child of God just needs to take a hold. exercise that faith grasp. Just start, right? It's the adult of God that eventually can do, you know, can have this, you know, all of this wisdom and insight and foresight and, okay, and begin to really take a hold of the oars and start rowing and this sort of stuff, you know, whatever analogy you want to use. But it all begins with just that quote-unquote leap of faith that, you know, I don't know exactly why or where this goes, but I know this is step one. Take a hold. Right, be, you know, the, you know, who's giving you that ability to initiate that with that faith grasp? The initiator, the Father. Why is he initiating you? Well, eventually, over time, as you begin to go down the way, you discover that that's a something, that that's the Mother, right? You know, and it's like, oh, that's why he initiated me, so that I could begin to move into relationship to the whole, which is not him, through the individuality of the whole, which is not him, right? That through the Mother, I can eventually get to perfection relative to the finite on the Isle of Paradise as a finaliter, and I can take an oath to the whole, to the Paradise Trinity. That's why he initiated me, so that eventually I could consecrate myself to the whole, the Paradise Trinity. Because that's what he did in the beginning. Step one, you know, even though he's an infinite part, step one was for that part to put himself in cooperative subordination to the whole. Right? That's everyone's goal. Every part is the goal of putting yourself into cooperative, right? It's a personal, you're not just a mindless, you know, will-less blob, right? Cooperative, exercise of will, cooperative subordination to the whole. That's the goal.
Chris, so yep. Remember you said a long, long time ago, within every ultimate time is the Isle of Paradise. Well, that's where God stands. So he's still there. I mean, he's with through all of us and through everything.
In terms of God, right, i.e. the Universal Father, humans have long thought that he was intimate with us through the front door, that he was ubiquitously present, you know, personally present ubiquitously throughout this room. No. He's intimate with us through the back door. Right? That influence at the center of every automaton, the influence of the aisle, right? That's the back door, right? That's the Father is intimate with you there. Who is intimate with you through the front door? The mother, right? She's the one that's ubiquitous and within. The Father is without. God is transcendence. But see, technically, he's just as intimate. But you can't experience that intimacy, you know, because it's through the back door. And initially, you know, your eyes are only looking out the front door. But logically, you can recognize, even though he appears to be infinitely far away, if you go the other way around the ellipse, right, he's just as close, right? But see, but that makes sense. It's like, oh, he gets me from the back door. Oh, so he's just there at the beginning as the initiator, see? And then you go forward from his initiation, right? And through endless cycles of eternity, okay, yeah, you come all the way back around, and as some co-absolute being, you know, you can be just as intimate with the Father as you've been with the whole hierarchy of the Mother all along, but that's way, see, down the road. You know, when you and God the Absolute are best buds, you know, and you know infinity just as well as he does. Yeah, that's a long ways down the road. slightly long ways. Okay. Okay. So now they throw in this section about the life carriers. And once you've read this and you remember that it's in the book somewhere, it always throws out, it must be in paper 36 somewhere. And so you're digging around in paper 36. Like, it's not there. Where in the heck? You know, here it is. So in usual fashion, right, they try to challenge you out of your linearity. You know, and if you want to have all the parts to the life carriers, they're distributed around, and you need to encompass the whole to really find all the aspects. So here's a key passage about the life carriers where they give us a little bit more about that little span of time that I flipped back to there a while back, 550 million years ago, when they initiated those eukaryotic plants, when they began the evolutionary life process. We're going to get a little bit more about the physics of that. And remember, by physics, I mean nature. The word physics literally means nature. Right? The paper on the nature of God, that's the paper on the physics of God. And so we want to understand a little bit more about the physics of the life carriers and how they actually get this going. They don't have a magic wand. How do they do it? Okay.
Section 1, life carrier functions. The life carriers are endowed with potentials of personality metamorphosis, which but few orders of creatures possess. These sons of the local universe are capable of functioning in three diverse phases of being. They ordinarily perform their duties as mid-phase sons, that being the state of their origin. But a life carrier in such a stage of existence could not possibly function in the electrochemical domains as a fabricator of physical energies and material particles into units of living existence.
Okay, so we analogize these differences of the energy type of the body of all these different celestial beings, usually in a vertical analogy. So normally they're up above where you can be hands-on with, literal molecular atomic energy systems. They can't manipulate, right, when they're above. Right? They move their hands around and what they're trying to grab a hold of is down below them, right, in the analogy. Right? So they don't touch it. If they're going to, they have to actually get hands-on, they are the ones that are putting the form into the molecular structure, that is the genotype, right? That is the DNA for those initial eukaryotic cells. Not to mention the whole eukaryotic mechanism and all that. They're building it. And it's only in that modified mode, when they're hands-on, that the reproductive spark comes down through, from the creative mother spirit, through them and into the organism. The fact that they say mid-phase there, even if you haven't looked ahead, it's like, well, there must be three of them, and apparently. And yes, there is. Notice that we've alluded to this. We immediately think of the material particles like I just was there, right? The matter, sort of literally. But there's all kinds of physical energies too, involved here that they don't even really halfway allude to even. We mentioned that it's obvious that, like when they start talking about how all the sub-electronic environment has to be in all sorts of certain special states in advance, and it's obviously very complicated, requires lots of masterful manipulation on their part. So that's what the physical energy about. That's that kind of mystery part that we don't fully appreciate is being involved in us right now. But we get the basic electrochemical, and see, that's reminding you. That's the common foundation for material creatures. It's the electrochemical phenomenon that we understand. When we read about all the different types of life, they're all electrochemical. It's not like some of our science fiction people imagine. It's like, well, what? Maybe there's, will creatures, like us that, just aren't electrochemical at all. It's all carbon-based, electrochemical, that carbon is the only atom that can do what needs to be done, because that's the energy pattern, the purposing that's imposed upon that physical energy. And God only needs one atom for that. There's no need for, well, let me just make another one just for the heck of it, you know, that you could use in a pinch or something. And no, you just, you know, he may, one, there's one carbon atom, and it serves every purpose that's needed at that foundational level. You throw in a little bit of hydrogen and oxygen and nitrogen and phosphorus and, you know whatnot, and you're off to the races.
The lightning bolt.
But we don't throw in the magic lightning bolt. Okay, so that, they never kind of openly stress that. But if you've ever wondered, if you think about the way they say it in passing sometimes, that is the common foundation, electrochemical. All right. Let's get this next little tidbit on them here.
Life carriers are able to function and do function on the following three levels. One, the physical level of electrochemistry. Two, the usual mid-phase of quasi-morontial existence. Three, the advanced semi-spiritual level.
Okay, so it's advanced relative to the usual. Notice the relativity of the, of the modifier there. It's, it's not, well, there's all the semi-spiritual stuff in there at the advanced level of the semi-spiritual. See, that's not the interpretation. It's relative to the word usual. Okay. But even their advanced state is just semi-spiritual. Okay, and and if you think about it, that makes sense, because we have that hierarchy of local universe suns, and they are, down there so that they can be the ones where literally the rubber meets the road at the electrochemical level. Right, so they may have these three levels that they can be reformed on, but the highest of the three is not going to be that high, right? It's going to be way below archangel sort of spiritual, right, or something like that. Right? Hence just semi-spiritual. And then they use the quasi-morontial. I mean, they're not morontial. I mean, they're not a warp and a woof sort of body, the weave of the two together. They're a homogeneous blend of physical and spiritual energy, and not a heterogeneous mixture, weaving, and the analogy they use. But it's, it's basically parallel, right? To where you're initially as with your Morontia bodies. Yeah. Get up higher with your Morontia body and you're gonna be more parallel to this semi-spiritual state and, et cetera. You move all the way up. The initial Morontia, their homogeneous blend is parallel to that. That's what they mean by, the quasi word, is kind of like saying Morontia-like. Or seemingly Morontial would be another way. That's kind of maybe even more, it appears that it's Morontial because it's just above the electrochemical, okay, but it isn't really. One of the ways you can literally substitute for the word quasi is seemingly. Okay.
Do you think that's kind of dividing lines of separate physics within those, like regarded kind of as domains?
Yeah, see, and then of course you can wonder, it's like, is this telling me anything about, the physics of this whole vertical dimension that we're imagining here? In what way is a secondary midway, near to me in energy form, but just above, quote unquote, right? It's like, he moves up a millimeter and now I can't see him, right? Because all I can see is in the, in the slab of that millimeter thick sheet of paper that I exist in, right? Right? You think about it in the Flatlander analogy, so that, for them to be visible, they just have to lower themselves down into Flatland and, ta-da, there they are. But of course, don't take that literally, obviously. They aren't literally vertically above us and, but they are very near in some, you know, there's some quote-unquote knob that's being turned, and then you start to wonder, well, is there, is it, you know, can you put it at any setting? Is it an analog knob, or is it a digital knob, you know? Can it only go from 1 to 2, and there is no 1.5, you know? Are they, you know, is this giving you some hint about how you go from the level of electrochemistry to the quasi-Maranchal, and because, you know, it's a step function, there isn't any state? I don't know. I mean, the mixtures here are complex. There's 18 triodities related to these homogeneous blends, so it's a very complicated thing. But
they kind of throw out the material realities fashioned after the divine order. I mean, what's that going to get?
Yeah, they do a number of fuzzy things like quasi and stuff. They're quasi-material. They're semi-material. I mean, that all that stuff has to do with the complexity of you know, of the full triodity domain of stuff, right? You know, I mean, one of the reasons why you would say quasi there is, you know, initially you think of Maranchal in a very linear fashion. We have matter and then this line up through Maranchal to a spirit endpoint. Yeah, and you're initially trying to rationalize everything onto that line, but actually, like I said, it's this multi-dimensional space that you know, you can project it sort of on a line, but you're losing a lot of detail about, well, they're actually over here with these kind of variations that you can't even imagine, you know. But if you sort of project them onto your line, they end up being a little bit above where you are, maybe like on third mansion world,
you know. Really helped us with the horizontal and the vertical. I really appreciate you bringing that up because I'm sure that's going to apply to the physics and the hierarchy up to the spiritual in all of these things, in the upper domain.
You know, it's just like when you're a first stage spirit, you're not made up pure spirit substance. You know, you're one of these blends of physical and spirit energy. And you know, creatures that are made out of pure spirit substance, those are those things that the revelators can't even comprehend that are on the eternal sun's world. Those are just completely incomprehensible facts. Right? How can you have any sort of a being, you know, or entity, an individuation out of the substance as the unity substance instead of the individuality substance? Right? See, you know, it seems illogical. You know, yeah, you want some spirit substance so you can kind of quote-unquote move up in this vertical analogy, but you have to have some physical energy so that you have some individuation, some individuality energy so that you're individuated. You know, what if you don't have any individuation energy? right? See, I mean, the revelators can't even figure out how to make sense out of those facts.
But you do have a body that can exist in Havana, 1,000 elements instead of 100.
But there's all these details. Anyway, all right. So did we? Yeah, I think we got everything there. Okay. So let's keep moving here.
When the life carriers make ready to engage in life implantation, and after they have selected the sites for such an undertaking, they summon the Archangel Commission of Life Carrier Transmutation. This group consists of 10 orders of diverse personalities, including the physical controllers and their associates, and is presided over by the Chief of Archangels, who acts in this capacity by the mandate of Gabriel and with the permission of the Ancients of Days. When these beings are properly encircuited, they can effect such modifications in the life carriers as will enable them immediately to function on the physical levels of electrochemistry.
Okay, so hearkening back at the beginning of the section, when they said the life carriers are endowed with potentials of personality metamorphosis, which but few orders of creatures possess. And your first thought there might have been, oh, yeah, kind of like when we talk about the Melchizedeks and how they can, you know, morph their energy expression all over the place. But notice here, the life carriers can't do this themselves. you know, like a secondary midwife can do it themselves, or Melchizedek does it themselves. They need this whole mysterious, undisclosed group of beings that do whatever on earth they do, you know, and, you know, just literally reform their body into this downstepped expression. You know, think something, sounds even more complicated maybe, but think something along the lines of, you know, Jesus giving the order, you know, basically Michael giving the order to put Lazarus back together again, right? You know, to engage constructing a body, right, at the, you know, the ultimate tonic or, you know, atomic at least, you know, level of micro manipulation, right, they're having to completely redo these beings by some very amazing physics, see. But you do have one of those high spirit beings, the archangels, overseeing it. You notice how often they are the overseers in a lot of these affairs. It's not just overseeing dispensational resurrections or, you know, things like that. You know, there's a general oversight. And see, and then when you say, oh yeah, they're the highest spiritual beings that are made in, you know, numbers, in, you know, significant numbers in a local universe. Oh, they're naturally oversight, see? You know, they're out there looking at the whole picture very much from the sort of the top of the local universe level, right? And overseeing whatever is going on, making sure that the whole local universe context is being considered here. Okay? This is their natural high vantage point kind of being they are. Did you have a,
yeah.
You have a question? Yeah.
So why do you think they need the permission of the Ancients of Days?
Oh, well...
because it's a new life and a new planet?
Remember that life carriers have three parents.
Okay, yeah.
Creator, Son, Creator, Mother, Spirit, and one of the Ancients of Days.
Right?
And they're Trinity origin beings. That...
Is it the permission that transforms them, or is it the permission for the life implantation?
I mean, technically, see, you're bringing the Trinity and the Mother into a, you know, an official administrative validation here of the process. I mean, the reason that the life carrier can bestow the first phase of life animation naturally is because of that innate relationship to the Trinity and hence the Mother, the conduit down, you know, the down through which that comes.
Sure.
See, the life carrier, I mean, the Ancients of Days, and you remember they mentioned at the beginning the Master Spirits. See, both of those other creators, along with the Creator Son and Creator Mother Spirit, are involved. All three of those levels of God the Sevenfold, those sevenfold creators, have their place in making sure that you definitely have brought into focus all the different facets of what's involved here. You know, if nothing else, you can just kind of think of it in simple terms like that. They would have to be involved because they're God too of this space. You know, not just the Creator Sons, Creator Mother Spirits, and the particular Master Spirit for that super universe. They're also God, and God has the full personalized deity, the full God in that super universe has to have a say in bringing life into play.
So when they've done their work in the labs and everything, and they're ready to go,
mm-hmm.
These beings, you know, if they don't do themselves, morph them into
mm-hmm.
a state
mm-hmm.
that allows them to be able to, you know, plant life and have life conduit through them somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And so therefore, because the Ancients of Days is in this universe, they have to be part of knowing what's going on. They probably are getting briefed, I would imagine. And,
yeah.
You know,
yep, they're aware.
So that's why, okay.
Yeah.
So they're part of the permission to do, because they don't get morphed if they're not ready to go do something, because that's not their normal state, right?
Yeah, and another thing, when I was saying about all the gods have to be involved, you can't, you don't just have God the Mother directly giving voice as the embodiment of the whole. Right? These parts, these agents of the whole, right? They have to all chime in, and when they all do, you know that it is the fullness of time for this spark to be bestowed. Right? There's nothing that's been missed. Everything has been considered, top down, bottom up, side to side, all the way through. You have the fullness saying yes. Right? This is the place. This is the time.
So there's no guesswork. This is not what happens.
Yeah, right.
It's a lot more together than I think we've ever imagined.
It's coordinated.
Yeah. Wisely so.
See, now technically, even though it appears that all these parts all come together with their free will on the same page, right? They all exist, see, within the Universal Mother. Right? The coordinator, you know, that actually gives it that wholeness. You know, that fact is there, but it isn't expressed as just one big mystical ta-da that just comes out of nowhere. See,
no, that's interesting. Yeah,
you know, that wholeness, you know, feeds into all the parts, right? And it all. And the parts all work together because they're in the context of that whole, in a perfectly coordinated way, in a holistic way, and it is done just so, just when, just where.
So we would have permission of the Ancients of Days for our creation too, then, for our birth and death. Yeah, because if
well,
the judge and jury basically of us, so they would definitely have something to do with
that. You can see where they come in terms of that final determination if you've gone to iniquity. Right? But, you know, very much your procreation was in the hands of the subtle, invisible hands of the Universal Mother. You know, why did that particular genetics just happen to come together at that place, at that time? Oh, and this particular personality identified with that, and right, that is there is deep mystery in that procreative act. I mean, that sort of condensation out of the mystery of the whole. Let's see here. I can't remember where we were. Okay, we're up here. there was a question over here. I knew there was something in my mind. Yeah, it was your question.
The implication in all this, though, is that the potential is that things go very wrong if they don't get it right from the get-go.
Yes. So
having to take eternity and infinity all into consideration in initiating this part.
Yeah.
Because if they initiate a part, that's not
improperly, good. Yeah.
The whole shebang.
Yep. So yeah.
This part is going to affect eternity.
And see, one of the reasons why, you know, when all is said and done, there are no coincidences, is because of this intense, multifaceted, multidimensional micromanagement,
purposing,
right? Part person, purposing. Coincidentally, all ends up being one holistic purposing, right? As if it never was parts, right? That, you know, and you are attempting, with your personality, to of your own volition join in on that amazing dance, that amazing play. To strike step with that incredible coordination where your absolutely unique free will coincidentally is perfectly synchronized with the wholeness of purposing. Right? That's your job. And you have a duty, your first duty, right, is to that whole. That's your moral duty. Right? You have a duty to the cosmos, to the whole. Right? You have that, you know, I must make sure that I'm not a renegade will, right? That I'm putting myself into cooperative subordination to the whole. That's my duty, my first duty, right? And if I've done that to some degree, if I've met some of my moral duty, I can now think about, well, what about those other parts? Okay, and in the context of my consecration to the whole, I can interact with the parts, you know, and serve my or fulfill my ethical duty. Not to mention, you know, there's not just that duty to others. There's that duty to the other. Right? I also have a religious duty, a duty to God. But you see, you know, like we were saying, you know, way back a while ago, it starts out where it appears that the only duty you have is just that religious duty, that duty to God. I have a duty to exercise my faith grasp. Just be a faith fact. But then as you mature, you know, you recognize, well, actually, there is a first duty, but I didn't recognize that that first step was given to me by grace, that encirclement in the Holy Spirit, that synchronization with the cosmos, that fulfillment of that moral duty. You had an additional measure of that. It was given to you by grace. And it was in that context that you could then exercise that religious duty, that faith grasp. Right? And but you don't recognize that initially, right? That there's this synchronization, this moral nature, this initial minimal moral nature that's given to you by grace, so that when that personality engages, that choice of that personality to identify with your mindful self is a moral choice, innately by grace. Because that moral nature, see, that initial moral nature was given to you by grace. You didn't, that isn't a free will choice of harmony with the cosmos, right? See, that first moral choice is unconsciously, superconsciously moral. It's technically a moral choice, but see, but not of your conscious doing. Right? You begin to recognize how much you've been dependent upon the other parent. You've never recognized it. Right? The father can't get to you except through the mother. If the mother didn't, if you weren't encircled in the Holy Spirit, circuited into the mother, the father couldn't get to you. Right? The personality can't identify with you if you aren't first encircled in the Holy Spirit. You know, we understand that in many ways, personality-spirit pattern. If you don't have a spiritual nature, if you aren't encircled in the Holy Spirit, how could a spirit pattern identify with you? You know, there's a number of ways you go, oh, that's logical. Right? But just see, appreciate what, you know, beginning to mature beyond a child of God is beginning to recognize some of these basic facts. It's like, wait a minute, logically, how could I have a duty to any part, even the part, the other, if I wasn't somehow given the whole in which all those parts exist first? Right? Right. Now that I recognize that that's the foundation, I should take delight in cultivating, having my relationship to the whole expanded, being grown. And the bigger the whole that I can get myself within, the more parts I can relate to well, and the better I can relate to the parts that I can initially relate to. Yeah, beginning to recognizing your other parent, you know, and how she's the way to all these things that you initially recognize as a goal, a better relationship with that other person. Say, you know, as a goal. And there's no way to just magically will it into existence like you, it initially appears that you can just do. I can just will it into existence, right? No, no. There was a predicate that you haven't recognized for that, right? She's the way to every goal. Right? This distinction is vital. For in a cosmic system, the individual members are not connected with each other except in relation to the whole and through the individuality of the whole. It doesn't matter which two parts you're talking about. We little you part, the big infinite God the Father part, it doesn't matter. You know which parts you're talking about. No two parts are connected to each other except through her. In the cosmic system that you really exist in. Right.
So when one has only the father view, it kind of reminds me of platitudes, and it's very unsatisfying when I'm around that. Like, I don't get anything out of it. Yeah. I can't participate.
Yeah. See, it's just that the reason there's always been magic in religion, you know, and everything else to a degree, or why, you know, why is there getting to be so much magic in science now, is because if all you have is the Father, the initiator, anything that follows the initiation step could only be rationalized by magic. There's no literal way for anything to happen after the starting point.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
It becomes flat and colorless, yeah. Makes the Father into caricature.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. See, that's what you... In order to give you the fifth epical revelation of God the Father, you need the first epical revelation of God the Mother. Because you just can't go any farther than the fourth. You know, you try to go any further, and the more... The Father just becomes, like you're saying, a caricature, two-dimensional. See, I mean, it's in the three-dimensionality of the whole that you finally can begin to see the Father better. The Father can be revealed to you better. Right? It's indispensable. You can only go so far with the Father until all good things taken to extreme become bad, until it starts to become majority what you end up with is just magic and not the Father. I mean, it starts out... You know, and no, it's net positive. But the further you go, it starts to go the other direction, and it just becomes nothing but a magical silliness. Yeah.
You suppose that's why so many people just throw God out altogether and just don't even want to go there and think about it.
Yes, it is. See, they don't. Yeah, go ahead, finish your thought. Yeah.
Well, just because it's becoming so. Unrealistic and magical and just not logical. You can't even think about it reasonably.
Yeah, everyone has a reality response by grace, and you know, and you just if you've developed that at all, even at the rudimentary levels that you know, sort of a scientific mind, you know, a genuine scientific mind has developed that. Your reality response immediately brushes some magical worldview aside. It's like that's silly. That's just magical, right? Yeah, they throw the baby out with the bathwater, right? But, unbeknownst to everyone, the problem with both science and religion is the fact that we've only been told about one parent all this time. We've reached the point where you have to recognize the other parent. The other parent is quite different. The way is distinctly different from the will, right? They're not just two different flavors of will, like two master spirits or something, right? And the mother is very different than the father. But without the mother, when you go beyond any primitive sort of mode, it's just magical. I mean, even you're thinking, well, aren't you going beyond a primitive mode during the Enlightenment? With someone like Newton coming up with Newton's law of gravity? No, think about Newton's law of gravity. It's fundamentally magical. Yeah, it allowed for a very powerful, rational picture to be imposed upon things, and you know, allow you to calculate things and sort it out. But think about just what it says gravity is. It says it's a magical action at a distance. See, again, without the mother, without what connects everything together, if you're going to connect two masses together without her, the only way you can connect them together is magically. And it doesn't, you know, and it just gets more absurdly magical when you go to general relativity. At least Newton's law was basically just the magic of the magic man, kind of, sort of, relational magic. This is the fundamental problem, you know. Religion and science, you have to bring in the physics of the other parent in order to understand what's going on without magic. Otherwise, you have theories that literally believe that the foundation of reality is the vacuum, right? And out of nothing comes everything. See, that's a magical theory. Current physics is predicated on the quote-unquote vacuum. There is no vacuum. Right? There is no nothing, and everything somehow magically sits on it or comes out of it. I mean, that's ridiculous. Right? If you're going to sit on something, you have to sit on something, not on nothing.
Out of zero, one.
Not even the Universal Father can create something out of nothing. The Magic Man can create something out of nothing, but not the Universal Father. If there's going to be an actuality, it has to come from a stuff called potentiality. You can't just make an actuality out of nothing. That's magic.
The Magic Man is
alive.
The smallest something is infinitely bigger than the largest nothing.
Like you hear me say so many times, I mean, going from the Magic Man of the Enlightenment to the magic matter of the Endarkenment in the 20th century is not a net improvement.
You said Endarkenment?
The Endarkenment, yes. Of the 20th and so far the 21st centuries, yeah. Let's see. Are we still on?
Yeah.
On the paragraph that ends with electrochemistry there?
Yes.
Okay. Let's see here. Is there anything else that we... meanwhile, back to the paragraph. Is there anything that we should have mentioned in the paragraph? Let's see. Other than just noticing, oh, there's that encircuited word again. You know, like encircuited in the Holy Spirit. Notice how they, you know, you can't easily look that word up in a dictionary. They had to. And it gives you that to, you know, to have a word to describe how most of this stuff is physically functioning. That it's not, you know, in this simple relational point A to point B sort of mode, but that there is this cosmic system. You know, and its circuits, its flows, its dynamics, its wholeness, right? And so you're just synchronized into one facet of that or another, right? You know, that circuit analogy, you know, makes you go around and around, you know, in one phase of the whole, right? So that's why they use that term.
Okay.
After the life patterns have been formulated and the material organizations have been duly completed, the supermaterial forces concerned in life propagation become forthwith active and life is existent, whereupon the life carriers are immediately returned to their normal mid-phase of personality existence, in which state they can manipulate the living units and maneuver the evolving organisms, even though they are shorn of all ability to organize, create new patterns of living matter.
All right, so like, you know, see, comes back around to that beginning. Okay, so it goes into that vast conspiracy thing, where you have this manipulation, but it's not a direct
you know, like they're saying, literally, I'm going to grab a hold of this atom and I'm going to put it there instead, you know, in this DNA strand. You know, they can't do that anymore, you know, because they don't have that electrochemical level, eye level engagement, okay? But there, you know, there's this vast conspiracy. And you notice it came around here. Now they're manipulating, right? Like they had the adjutants doing. And they're also maneuvering. Fun little using those two words in differential. I mean, they practically mean exactly the same thing. You can see they both start with the hands on, M-A-N, right? But the maneuver word has a little bit more of a flavor of, well, you know, as I look, if I don't look so much just right to the point in front of me at this point in time, but if I kind of put my eyes on the long, you know, take the long view, you know, I'm going to maneuver it, you know, towards that evolutionary end. See, it has that little bit of flavor. See, and they use that differential there. Does the evolving, see, organisms.
So basically, Chris, they yep. have to become one, you know, one with the environment. That's why the electrochemists, they have to change that. And then when they get to the second level, then they go back and then they can organize. But they can't do that before because they have to become one with it in order to.
Yeah, in the same way that this cup is, is an electromagnetic, you know, or electrochemical, if you will, phenomenon, and you know, and so is my hand, and so my hand can hold this cup, right? I mean, they have to be made so that you know their energy directly interacts with physical energy. And so they can manipulate it, you know, like a potter grabbing a hold of clay and molding it into the form that they want. But then they're backed off from that. And they're just going to, you know, they're going to say, Master Physical Controllers, I'd like you to turn the knob, you know, from 2 to 3. And, you know, we don't, remember we talked about that. We don't understand exactly. But, you know, they just... They do this whole environmental vast conspiracy thing, where they're guiding it, you know. They're sort of being the personality direction, right? The mind universe is mind made and personality managed. See, they're the personality management, sort of ultimate direction, until there's will creatures, and then they're not going to impose their personality management on it anymore. It's like, guess what? It's in your hands, Anna Infanta, and your descendants. Huh? I don't know anything about the big picture. Are you sure you should hand the reins over to me? Yes. We have absolute respect for free will. It's going to be ugly for a long time in your ignorant hands, but eventually it'll all work out. You know, you just see.
This range that they have in these three different some relation between this range and this transformative only we're going into semi-spiritual, so we are going through this.
Yeah. I mean, I think kind of along the lines, you know, it kind of comes up at the end of this section, right? What you're getting at. We'll touch on it when we get to there. Try to remind me to kind of answer your question when we get there. The specific fact we want to note here in this paragraph is see, after the life patterns have been formulated and the material organizations have been duly completed, okay, so that whole bit of constructing it, and remember they, you know, in the life carrier paper, they tell you they've got labs and everything. Okay, I mean, they aren't just, it's not like they just in their presence, they can, manipulate atoms like a power being can. I mean, they've got technology. I mean, they set up a lab, right? You know, and they've got gizmos and whatnot. And, you know, they're building these things in a lab. You know, we don't know if they literally have tweezers, you know, and whatnot. But I mean, effectively, they've got tools and devices, right? And they're building this. Like, eventually, we'll be able to think about doing stuff. You know, way down the road on this planet, we'll have that kind of technology.
you know, for genetic engineering and stuff. But then, you know, the fancy thing happens. You know, once they've done that, just very sophisticated manipulation. You know, literally hands-on, like you can analogize and you know imagine. Right? Then you get this reproductive spark. That second phase of the life animation see comes down. You know, and that's they're describing there. The supermaterial forces concerned in life propagation become forthwith active, and life is existent. You're going, wait a minute, but there's been life for several hundred million years, like in our planet. Oh, they mean reproductive life, evolutionary life, right? That reproductive spark. Because remember, with just the living vitality, right, you don't literally reproduce. You produce copies. The prokaryotic cell just copies its loop of DNA and, you know, binary fission. It splits into two cells. Right, it produces a copy. It doesn't reproduce. It doesn't put itself into that mode where that subtle hand of the mother is in play. And coincidentally, certain genetic results come out, right? Instead of just, yep, same genetic, you know, set over and over and over and over. See, you've got that whole reproduction. See, and that happens, that is animated, that fancier process is animated by this additional measure from the creativity of deity being bestowed. That creatively, there's a reproduction of the former production. See? Not just yet another identical production, but a reproduction. See? Creative. It's personality managed as it goes from the parents to the child by the personal purposive hand of the universal mother. Right? That's personality managed by her, unseen. Just what DNA ended up being in you from your grandparents. Yep.
Yeah, David Jones is not sure he's heard you address this or not. Would you expect the life carriers to be able to manipulate at the atomic level or merely at the molecular level?
No, you know, you notice they said material particles into units of living existence. That's vague enough that, I mean, there's probably sub-electronic physics going on here too, because remember, they talking about how this has to interface with this sub-electronic energy environment and stuff. So, I mean, heavenly days. I have no idea exactly how minute it goes, but it's going to be very advanced.
Remember when Jesus was healing the 600 or 1,000 people, and he said a whole retinue of beings and life carriers and who always accompanied this.
Yeah.
So at that time, you know, they may have morphed based on some other.
Well, they wouldn't have to morph. They could have just directed, you know, and the physical controllers can do all the real, you know, like the master physical controllers are grabbing hold of all the molecules and atoms and, you know, and manipulating them from water to wine. You know, of course, it's not literally just taking HDO and making wine out of it. You're getting a whole bunch of other molecules and combining them in and, you know, gluing it all together into wine.
I was talking about the healing, but same thing.
Whatever it is. You know, whatever molecule, you know, sometimes you're just rearranging molecules, like, well, they're out of form, let's put them back into form, now you're healed, you know, or sometimes, well, we don't have the molecules we need. A lot of Lazarus's molecules are not located here anymore. They've begun to diffuse. And so we need to collect some molecules that we need and, you know, put it all back together again. And, you know, but in the same way that a grapevine takes molecules out of the soil and the air and the water and makes a grape, right? You know, those master physical controllers can do the same thing. They can collect the same molecules together and make what you need. You know? All right.
Boy, we get off on these tracks, and I forget if I'm there's something immediately to point that I'm trying to say. Yeah, let's see here. We're running out of time too. Okay, let's see. We said about that. Yeah, I think we got everything there. Yep, keep going. Okay.
After organic evolution has run a certain course and free will of the human type has appeared in the highest evolving organisms, the life carriers must either leave the planet or take renunciation vows. That is, they must pledge themselves to refrain from all attempts further to influence the course of organic evolution. And when such vows are voluntarily taken by those life carriers who choose to remain on the planet as future advisors to those who shall be entrusted with the fostering of the newly evolved will creatures, there is summoned a commission of 12, presided over by the chief of the evening stars, acting by authority of the system sovereign and with permission of Gabriel. And forthwith these life carriers are transmuted to the third phase of personality existence, the semi-spiritual level of being. And I have functioned on Urantia in this third phase of existence ever since the times of Andon and Fanta.
Yeah, it's always fun when they go first person. We've already talked about, these basics here mostly. But just notice the details. It's a different group of beings now. And you kind of get the sense that it's probably involves beings that it have higher energy natures, because now they're being taken up a notch. Okay. You've got the chief of evening stars involved. And just notice that. It's not just any old archangel or any old evening star. Notice it was the chief of archangels and the chief of the evening stars. You talk about the Ancients of Days being, directly. See, this is a big deal. I mean, all eyes of the local universe are on this one little dirt ball, right, when this is happening. This is big stuff.
Does it have to do with the chief of master spirits, too?
Oh, yeah. The particular super universe master spirit is...
We have all these chiefs.
Well, there isn't a quote-unquote chief of the master spirits. Each master spirit...
Well, what is it then about our seventh one?
Well, the seventh one, because the seventh embodies all three aspects, he can represent the whole and better than the other six.
Yeah. Is there another word that I'm thinking of?
Yeah.
He presides over them when they meet.
Yeah, but you don't want to think of it, I mean, the chief of the archangels is slightly different than the run-of-the-mill archangel, right? And, I mean, and a kind of a notch up, right? You got to be careful. Don't make the seventh master spirit a notch up from the other six,
I think I always did.
Yeah, I mean, you avoid that. I mean, because if he was the... the biggest thing, what does that do to the first master spirit that Michael was consecrating his will to on his seventh bestowal? Right. First shall be last, the last shall be first, i.e. there is no last or first, right? So just note that it's this different group that do this, whatever the heck they do, to morph them into this semi-spiritual state now. And you notice the third phase of personality existence. Oh, you mean they have a different personality now? See, again, he's like, oh, no, they don't mean, right, you haven't changed that existential fact, right? It's a different, it's a different self form through which that personality influence is manifesting. Right.
So when I first read this, before I got to this part, my mind was like, oh, geez, these life carriers have got this much stuff. Why don't they just come in here and straighten things out? Then you read this, they take an oath, their hands off.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
Yeah, and
otherwise you would think they would.
Yeah, right. However, the ones you want to get annoyed at is... tomorrow, the secondary midwares
could set up a hospital and cure everyone that walked in the front door. But they don't do it because they're not allowed to. They could fix anyone's cancer, you know, in short order and throw you out the back door. They have advanced technology.
They must have to take oaths, though, because they'd be tempted to do just that.
Yeah. Before they took oaths, many strange things occurred on this world. I mean, you remember what they say. You can imagine what was going on when they were all just renegades. I mean, even the non-rebels, you know, were just, you know, bored from day to day. And it's like, well, I don't know, what can I do today? okay, but the that whole bit that you brought up, that you notice how the life carriers have to take this vow, be hands off, and they have to bring in higher beings that can do the personality management subtly enough that they don't violate the free will rights of the mortals, you know, to see. So it kind of gives you the sense that the life carriers, you know, they would be a little bit of a bull in the china shop, right? You have to have someone who can do it with, you know, this very subtle finesse where you don't, you know, you do just this little bit of subtle tweaking, but basically it's a free will evolutionary phenomenon. You know, unless the Lenana deck goes rogue, right? And then, you know, you're wishing, man, I wish the life carriers, yeah, they're a bull in the china shop maybe, but not that big of a bull in the china shop. The incredible personal responsibility that the Lenana deck has. See, in the violation of that trust, like they tell you, that is so horrendous.
It's funny too, Chris. He's only been here since Andon Infante.
No.
He said no.
No, he's been in the States since Andon Infante. He's been here since 550 million years ago.
In this third phase, since the time.
So yeah, but he was in the second phase, 550 million years ago.
Maybe before then,
right? Yeah, I mean Yeah, it's very likely that he's one that, you know, was here on those scouting parties, you know, earlier too. Yeah.
Could have been created.
Oh yeah. I mean, he's very, very ancient. Yeah, but in terms of actually, you know, he's been here and hasn't left for the last 550 million years.
Yeah. So he's gone to the third phase.
Since Andon Infante. Yep. Okay, this last little bit.
It's also curious that it's 12 for the third phase of existence and 10 for the. 12 for the more spiritual and
10. Yeah, and you notice this is a commission of 12. We're up above. It's consists of 10 orders of diverse personalities. So apparently a big job on that first one, whatever the heck they're doing. Okay, last little bit here.
We look forward to a time when the universe may be settled in light and life, to a possible fourth stage of being wherein we shall be wholly spiritual. But it has never been revealed to us by what technique we may attain this desirable and advanced state.
Yeah, so there's advanced and then there's advanced. Right, see? Yeah, it's an advanced semi. Yeah, well, relatively advanced, but we're thinking a little bit more. But see, they know that until the local universe is settled in light and life, you know, it's not even remotely possible that, you know, they could be moved on to a next stage like that. Well, that's always the mystery when you get.
We've heard of everything, and they haven't even heard of it.
There's a lot of places in the book like that where you go, well, haven't they talked to other local universes? That's a mystery that's often floating around in these statements. But I mean, just quickly here, and then we'll wrap up about what you know you were bringing up there a moment ago, Barbara. This whole bit of us desiring the goal of our ascension career, of using what we're reading here to help appreciate that line of ascent to the Isle of Paradise, striking our our long-term view towards that high goal. See, non-ascension beings are in the same mode. If you give them a little taste of the vertical, you know, if they're a creature that is just all, a stationary order that just functions on a horizontal level, you know, somewhere in the hierarchy, you know, they're happy as a pig in mud, you might say, right? You know, but you give them a little taste of the vertical, like you take a life carrier and you move them a little bit along the vertical line, you know, a little, here's a little down and here's a little up. Ooh, I like that dimension. I yearn now for, can I go ever upward? And they know, and it's like, no, I just need to put that in the back of my mind. And maybe in the local universe and settled in light and life, I could hope for such a thing, but who knows? Maybe not until the grand universe is settled in light and life. I'm going to have to be patient.
and there could be finalities in our universe from a universe settled in light and
yeah.
life.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That may have teased them.
but I just wanted to point out, can you feel that? You know, how it is? We look forward to a time. See, why? Why do they? It's because they've been given a little taste, right, of the vertical. Okay, and it's a more of a challenge to be content in the horizontal. Hundreds of millions, billions, trillions of years after trillions of years. No, I'm content. I'm doing fine.
They are concerned with evolution, and evolution is inherently
yes. The vertical dimension of evolution that they foster just reminds them ever more of going up, and they can't.
I've forgotten what kind of numbers we're talking about with these life carriers. In how many come here, and how many are here now?
Let's see. Right now we have. See, I can never keep at 12, isn't it now, I think? Am I remembering correctly there, I think? But initially, you've got many. You've got all three types. I'm trying to remember, is it like 100, 1,000? And I don't remember. You can go back and look in paper 36. It tells you there. There's lots to begin with. I should have looked those up and reminded myself of those numbers again. But it goes from a big number to a handful. If any stay at all. I mean, or sometimes none stay. Okay. You can see the next section is a big section, and you can tell by the title why it's a big section, because now we've kind of have the preliminaries out of the way, and they are going to give us that sweep again through the evolutionary process. With a different twist on it than they did when they went into all the individuality minutia details, you know, in the previous papers. Okay, let's take a moment here, everyone.